This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to the show, Stephen. Stephen A. Russell is here to talk movies with us.
Always a pleasure to be in with you lads on a glorious Sunday afternoon.
Mm, look at you, you're in a t-shirt.
I know.
Yeah, last Saturday I think I'd have spent the entire day with a heater on the sofa.
That's exactly. My mom,
yeah. Bless Melbourne.
Yes, exactly. We all wouldn't change a thing.
No. And look, I think I'm going to start... I think that is a good segue. I'm going to flip which film I'm going to start with because of that, about changing a thing.
Okay, go for it.
And we actually have a reboot to talk about this week of a classic horror film. And I know, David, you're a fan of the 1989 original Pet Sematary. And we now have it remade by Kevin Kolsch and Dennis Windmeyer.
Now, who wrote the book?
It's Stephen King, the only probably the most famous horror meister ever known to undead cats or zombie children.
Yeah. And The Shining, of course. Yeah. And, like so many of these movies, books have been turned into movies, haven't they?
Including not just the horrors, Stand By Me, Shawshank Redemption, and a whole bunch of...
What a man, writer, extraordinary. And Pet Sematary, because when was the original out?
The book was 1983. Yep. And this was during the period when I understand he was fairly off it most of the time. But bizarrely, that's where a lot of his best work comes from, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is one of the most affecting stories. So essentially, you have... I don't think it's a spoiler, it's kind of reasonably well known, but let's just say you have a grieving family, and the film's really about... When you lose someone far too soon, and the kind of madness, the desperation to have them back, and what you would do at all costs. So the kind of premise is that the family who have just moved to the country, and it's Jason Clarke, the Australian actor,
who plays
the grieving father here. So him and his family have just moved into, a kind of country home, backing onto a thick woods. Moving to a house in the woods is never a good thing to do in horror films, FYI. And essentially what we have here, and it's a theme that comes up in a lot of Stephen King's horror books, because he grew up in a part of America that has a very rich Native American history. And he was kind of obsessed with that, the kind of the violence of loss and ancient tradition as well. And so he has in this story posited that there is a ancient burial ground not far behind the house.
Yeah.
But it had been abandoned by Native Americans because apparently the ground is sour. And, so essentially what we have is, as we all know from the hilarious animatronics of the 1989 movie, the family cat gets it first of all. And, John Lithgow plays this cranky old neighbour who just happens to know that actually there's a suggestion the town's been kind of reanimating people for quite some time. And so he suggests that with the young daughter, Devil, that they bury the family cat, and it then comes back as a really cranky, matted demon cat. And in this, I love that they've gone for Maine Coons in this one, and there's a bunch of them playing the same cat church, but it's a really cool looking cat.
Yeah.
And of course, when tragedy then strikes later of a human variety, the temptation is too much for what you might be able to do. Look, people who know this story really well, whether through the book or whether the 1989 film by Mary Lambert, you are going to get a slight difference here. There's enough tweaks to the bones of the story that I'm not going to give away. But, you'll get a few surprises even if you're really familiar with this one.
Because I love the book.
Yep.
And I love the first version of the film.
Yep.
So I'm intrigued to see what this one's like. So, so obviously don't give too much away, which you can't.
I won't.
It should be fun.
Yeah, look, it's
scary as all hell too, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know, but I'm quite a seasoned horror maester myself.
Okay. I'm
definitely not either.
There's quite a few jumps in there, and the special effects are definitely a step up.
Yep.
And look, you know, people are loving Jordan Peele's Us. Now, I really loved his smart, you know, horror comedy Get Out a few years back about, you know, racial division in America and white privilege. And at the moment, we also have in cinemas Us, which is follow-up, and I was really disappointed by that one.
Oh, because that's getting good reviews, isn't it?
Yeah, it has, but there's a small kind of kickback. Like, it stars the two people from Black Panther, Winston Duke and Lupita Nyong'o, and they play a married couple who also go to a cabin in the woods. Again, stop doing this if you're in a horror film. It's 101. Don't do stupid things.
Yeah.
Anyway, the gist of this one is with their two young kids that they are attacked by evil doppelgangers. And the concept, it's just a bit more obvious this time round about the underclass in America, you know, the idea that we're warring against ourselves. I found the pace really leaden. I found the ideas really thin. There's a lot of clunky exposition. There's a couple of great scenes. The opening 15 minutes is a masterclass, and you know, it had me really excited. Like, here we go again. Jordan Peele's got it again. But no, this one did not do it to me. So actually, I did not expect to love a reboot more than an original horror, but I did enjoy Pet Sematary more.
Excellent. Good.
Now, talking about the past, Rupert Everett, who, you know, people I'm imagining would know from My Best Friend's Wedding, also ex-best friend of Madonna.
Yes.
He has realised a lifetime ambition to direct a film about Oscar Wilde, in which he also stars, and he wrote it, and that's The Happy Prince.
Yeah, and he, so many people have said, and he has said it himself, he's been waiting for this opportunity to play that role. You know, like, he was born to play a role somewhere down the track.
Absolutely. Look, I actually had the joy of interviewing him last week, and he sort of said, you know, the first time I came across Oscar Wilde was when my mum read me The Happy Prince, you know, his little short story about, you know, a swallow that falls in love with a golden statue.
Yep.
And it's a beautifully heartrending tale of love. And that put the idea in his head very young. But funnily enough, it was when, as he sees it, that him being out and proud, he believes, hampered his career. And so it was sort of when that began to happen that he really began to associate more with Oscar Wilde, and particularly, as we all know, you know, someone that went from being the talk of the town to absolute penury in Paris in his final days, and you know, shame, and so that's where the film really focuses. I mean, it's quite dreamlike. It jumps backwards and forwards, but predominantly it's about those final days of his life. And one of the things I really love about it is it really brings the sort of inner circle back to him. So you have, you know, period people will love Rupert's, actually, The Importance of Being Earnest, co-star Colin Firth here as Reggie Turner.
Because they've got a great relationship, because they did the St. Trinian's movies together, which they were so camp.
And
Colin Firth,
I think he loves camping it up.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's such a serious actor most of the time.
Yeah. And look, the real breakthrough for me here, I mean, Rupert is excellent as Wilde, but I really loved Reggie Turner, who plays Edwin Thomas, who plays Robbie Ross, who is his literary agent. And the film really makes you ache for Wilde not seeing the really good man that was behind him all the way, rather than, you know, falling for Oliver. Sorry, I'm getting all confused here. We have Colin Morgan, who plays the really self-centered Bosie. And the whole way through, I was like, why couldn't he love Robbie? Why does he love Bosie?
Unfortunately, that's what
I know. And Emily Watson is also great as Constance.
But she's brilliant.
She absolutely is. Yep. It's a beautiful film, really looking at an important figure. And, you know, I mean, the destruction of Oscar Wilde it's sort of one of those early rallying points that would lead, it would sow the seeds to, you know, queer liberation down the track. Yep. So I can't recommend enough that that went out on Thursday there, The Happy Prince.
But that was here in a couple of film festivals a year ago.
Yeah, well, it just showed at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, and last year there was previews at the British Film Festival.
Yeah.
But I'd definitely say go out and have a look at that one. Missing Link is the new gorgeous animation from Laika, who I actually think do a better job even than Pixar, who are obviously the super famous ones.
I have no idea who Laika is because I'm not into animation.
Yeah, look, they did some really cute ones like Coraline, Paranorman, Kubo and the Two Strings.
No, I still don't know what you're talking about. It sounds like you're talking another language to me. Do you know them, Neil?
No, I don't either.
Well, look, Hugh Jackman, I'm going to guess you know him.
I've heard of him.
He basically voices Sir Lionel Frost, who's this monster hunter obsessed with, you know, discovering things like the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, right. Oh, fun.
And he learns of the existence of the Sasquatch in America, and Zach Galifianakis voices this big lumbering hairy beast who is the last of his kind, but has found out about the Bigfoot in Nepal.
All right.
And so he wants to travel the world to try and find creatures like him.
Yeah.
And so what we have is those two come together because, you know, basically the explorer wants to be a really world-renowned, you know, explorer. And so they kind of realize they have a common goal. If they could both find the big feet, then, you know, that would be great. What we also have is Zoe Saldana, who I love from the Guardians of the Galaxy films. She plays a widower and fellow explorer who has a bit of a thing for Lionel in the past. And the three of them go off on this great adventure. And look, the animation is absolutely stunning. It's really done in the old-fashioned stop animation way. Where they actually put a lot of time and effort into, you know, the way they render Tweed in Suits, or, you know, the roiling seas, is just mind-blowing.
Oh, sounds good.
Yeah, look, the script...
I won't see it, but it sounds good.
Oh, well, there you go. The script and the comic timing could be a wee bit tighter, but it looks absolutely lovely. And, you know, for kids, this is a really glorious film about embracing who you are.
And Hugh Jackman, does he sound good in this?
Yeah. He's having a lot of fun.
He is just... How busy can he be?
I know.
You're like, wow, you know, it's
all over the place.
Yeah, good on him. And so how many stars?
I'm going to give that one 3.5, I think. And The Happy Prince, I'd give 4. Pet Sematary, I'd give 3. Oz, I'm only giving 2. And have I got time to squeeze one last? Right. Last but not least, we also have former Monty Python, Terry Gilliam, who people might know for films like Time Bandits, 12 Monkeys, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Love that.
And Brazil.
Yep. Love that. Oh, my God.
I mean, absolutely one of the absolute best dystopian, you know, sci-fi stories ever. Really love that. Well, he has finally realised a 30-year... If Rupert, you know, took his time to get to Oscar, it took him 30 years to do The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. And most famously, about 20 years ago, he tried to film it with John Rushmore and Johnny Depp, and everything went wrong. Biblical floods, fighter jets going over the crew. John Rushmore was taken ill. Like, the film got shut down by the insurers.
Wow.
So the fact that he... And do you know what? Orson Welles tried desperately to make this film and couldn't make it happen.
Yeah.
So this has kind of become just like the story of Don Quixote.
How funny.
You know, the tragic folly represented in real life.
And was it worth it? Is it okay?
It stars Jonathan Pryce, who is in Brazil, and also Adam Driver, who is a great young actor. And they kind of play Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, but slightly don't either. It's a very metatextual comic film about people trying to make the film. And look, it's a lot of fun. If you like his off-the-wall sense of humour and his really kind of rich visual illustration-led imagination, then I think you're going to get a lot from this. It won't be for everyone. It's a very odd little film. But I really enjoyed it, and great to see you finally got there.
Oh, it's a lovely story. The backstory is great.
Yep.
Okay, what's it called again?
And that is The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, and I'd give that 3.5 as
right.
well.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, boys.
Thanks, Stephen. You're here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.